Welcome back to another episode of the Way Forward podcast. This episode I had on Isabel Friend to discuss all things water. We went into the esoteric, metaphysical side of water and talked about the science of water. It's like, as I shared in the episode, Dr. Gerald Pollack meets Veda Austin and they came together, and that is Isabel Friend. Veda had originally told me that I should interview Isabel. And was just raving about how knowledgeable she is and just how eloquent and just her relationship to water. And it's so apparent in this discussion that we had. And then she shared this prayer that she says over water every day at the end of this discussion. And it was just so unbelievably beautiful. This whole conversation really blew me away at so many angles. I was kind of dumbfounded and didn't even know where to take it. My mind was just kind of racing, tying together so many things with respect to the human biofield and water fasting, and even tying in Vinny and the power of prayer, the episode that we did with Melissa Sell. I mean, so many episodes tied into this one, and she contextualized the relationship between water and light and energy and hydration, and it was just an amazing episode, and I'm so stoked for you all to watch or listen to it. So as I always say, I'm going to stop talking so we can go ahead and get into the episode with Isabel Friend. Thanks for tuning in. And we are live, Isabel. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah, pumped for this conversation. Veda, who's a good friend of mine, who I've, you know, people in the audience are probably sick of me bringing up Veda Austin or Dr. Edith. There's like two people I mention all the time. But Veda mentioned she had a really cool conversation with you, and she said that I absolutely had to interview you. So I think I was already following you on Instagram. And then at that point, I was like, okay, I'm just going to reach out. And here we are. So, want to get into a number of topics, both like the science side of water, but then also some more esoteric facets of water. But I think it's appropriate considering how deep you've dived into water, no pun intended, to get a sense of where you're coming from and your background and how you even got involved in water research.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, first of all, big thanks to Veda. She's a dear friend. I love her work. I'm such an admirer of hers as well. And so, yeah, that was a really, we've had some pretty deep dives. It's rare that you meet somebody who's like totally on the same page and you get to speak the same language and dive really deep. So that was definitely a treat for me too. And in terms of my background and my history, I first started studying water in 2009. So at the time, I was a nutritionist. I was living in New York, and I was fully convinced that as human beings, we have infinite potential. And I thought at the time, because you are what you eat, that clearly the food that we eat must be the key to tapping into that infinite potential. And so I was specifically studying nutrigenomics, which is how the food that we eat actually affects our gene expression. And I was finding that the more wild and non-hybridized and non-domesticated our food, the more non-domesticated our expression and the more our genes actually start to express more healthy, more whole ways like our wild progenitors. And so I was wildcrafting and foraging a bunch of my food. And then I started to think, well, why am I not doing this with my water as well? I started wildcrafting raw wild spring water from springs in nature.
Where were you located at the time, by the way?
At that time, I was in Brooklyn. There was a spring on Staten Island I used to
go
to.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Just several lifetimes ago. And that had the most profound impact on me, mind, body, and spirit. And I started to realize, well, yes, you are what you eat, but it's almost more true to say that you are what you drink, or you are the water that you're made of. Because, you know, I'm sure most people listening have heard that you're 70% water, and that's true by volume. But molecularly speaking, if you were to count all of the molecules in your body, 99.95% of them are water. So for every 1,000 molecules in your body, 999.5 of them are water. So the water that we drink has a far greater impact on us than the food that we eat. We can't even absorb the nutrients that we eat except through the osmotic process of water. And all of those nutrients are actually put into effect through all of the processes of water within our bodies. Everything that our body does is some effect of water metabolism or phase changes of water, et cetera. And so that's when I discovered the work of Victor Schauberger, who was a naturalist in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And I started diving into his work, which is just brilliant.
You know, what did you learn from Victor? Because I've heard his name before, but I've never looked into any of his work.
Oh, you got to look into him. I'll send you some links for good places to start, because it can get pretty dense. But they say that he is what Tesla was for electricity, Schauberger was for water. Wow. But actually, when you start looking into Tesla's later work, Tesla was actually studying Schauberger, and in his later work started to talk about water a lot more. So Schauberger basically had a more in-depth understanding of water than even modern hydrologists will come to in the next 200 or 300 years, or at the pace we're going at with hydrology, which is kind of going backwards. It'll take us 1,000 years. But I would say one of his most profound insights that if we were to implement it would absolutely shift everything is this idea that fundamentally there are two main modes of direction in nature. And one is the direction that nature uses for creation of life and creation of energy, and that is a very water-based direction. It's this implosive direction that is cooling, and as there is implosion, there's energy generation. That's why nature never suffers from entropy or runs out of energy. That's why, stars in the cosmos are able to circle together in these galaxies without ever running out of energy, because they work on this implosive principle. Whereas in nature, when nature wants to decay or decompose or compost something, the death principle in nature is more fire-based and is more explosive and just radiates outward. And they're both important and they're both natural. But obviously, if we want to align more with life and less with death, then as a society, we need to switch to implosive-based energy generation. Water can actually generate free energy, and Victor Schauberger was tapping into that. It can also have levitational properties and many other incredible abilities when we actually understand its true nature and start aligning with that. Whereas if you look at what humanity has done for the past, since the Industrial Revolution and even before, all of our energy generation modalities, whether you're talking about nuclear or coal or anything, so even steam engines, it's all explosive. It's all fire-based and radiative. So it actually spends more energy than it creates, which is why we're running into the problem that we are now with nothing being regenerative in nature. So it's really a matter of shifting just 180 degrees to align with life and free energy rather than aligning with death and decomposition and decay.
Wow. Wow. That was beautiful. I was on a health panel yesterday with Dr. Zach Bush at the Independent National Convention, and he mentioned something, and I had always kind of thought of this, that disease happens because of two reasons: lack or loss of energy and dehydration. Mm-hmm. So specifically speaking to the dehydration part, can you talk about why we are so dehydrated? Just at a high level, and then we can get into the depth of it, I guess.
Yes. And first, I'd like to say that you actually can't separate the two, that they're actually part and parcel of the same phenomenon. When you are dehydrated, then there is a loss of energy, because what is the conductor of energy in the body? It's your body water. It is that highly conductive fluid that conducts all of the electricity in your biofield, right? So, we think of the nerves, for example, as being conductors of electricity. Well, nerves are 70% water, and they actually have rivers of water within the nerves that are called microstreams. We think of the fascia as being this highly conductive network, but what is fascia? It's 80% water and 20% protein. We think of the DNA as being this master. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about DNA in general. We won't go into it right now.
I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah. Who did I talk to? I've talked with a few people recently. I think it was Dr. Kelly Brogan, who's a good friend of mine. And we started talking about DNM. Like, can we even say that anymore? Is that a thing? I don't know. Yeah, go ahead though.
I don't think it necessarily programs our biology in the way that people have thought, but I do think that it is a powerful antenna and that it is totally absolutely picking up on information. So what gives it the capacity to be an antenna in that way? Well, some of the most highly structured water in your entire body is actually a spinal column that is holding the double helix in place. The only reason why the double helix has that chiral shape to it is because there are these incredibly tightly packed chelathrate water molecules holding them in place. And water, when it is in its very, very structured form, is fundamentally a fractal antenna in nature. And also water as a dipolar molecule is a battery. So it has a north pole and a south pole. And there are ways of aligning the molecular structure that actually generate, resonate, and even amplify energy, vibration, and frequency. So when you talk about, you know, the two main causes of disease being lack of energy and dehydration, they're part and parcel of the same thing. We tend to think of dehydration as being a matter of how much water you're drinking, and that if you're not drinking enough water, then you're dehydrated.
Yeah.
And actually, if I'm here to share anything, like in my career in general as a water nerd, if I'm here to talk about
anything, your official title of water nerd,
I think that's my job title. You can don't even call me Isabel, just be like, hey, nerd.
Dr. Nerd.
That'll work. So I really want to get this point across to people that actually what dehydration is a variety of factors more to do with our bio water and its capacities than to do with the water that we drink. And so our bio water is affected by absolutely everything in our environment and in our lifestyle. And when dehydration starts to happen, yes, it has a lot to do with the quantity of water in our body. That's what most people think of it as. It also has a lot to do with the structure of those water molecules within our bodies. It has a lot to do with the mineral profile or mineral composition of how many electrolytes are dissolved into our bio water, which is part of what gives it its electrical capacity as a conductor. So ideally, our blood plasma should have the exact same mineral ratio as the ocean did back during the Cambrian period when vertebrates first learned carry the oceans within themselves as their own bloodstream in order to walk on land. So when we deviate from that oceanic mineral profile, then disease states start to develop, and that's another form of dehydration. It also has a lot to do with the isotopic composition of the hydrogen within that water. So if we're talking about protium hydrogen, your cells can make a lot of energy from that, because basically there's this ATP synthase process where the nanomotors on your mitochondria take in hydrogen, and then they spit out ATP, and ATP functions to cohere or to create more gel-like structure within your intracellular fluid. So we think of
exclusion zone water at that point, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So it's the ATP that creates more exclusion zone water. So if you have the wrong kind of hydrogen in your bio water, if you have deuterium hydrogen, which is heavy hydrogen, then you're not producing as much energy. So the more structure is in that intracellular fluid, the higher your cellular voltage. And that's why when we talk about hydration and energy, they're the same thing. Like, we even use the same measurement for both of them. We use a measurement called a phase angle test. And the phase angle test tells you how hydrated you are by measuring how much electricity can be brought across your cell membranes. And that tells you how much water is being brought across. So the more your prana, your mana, your chi, the more your hydration at a one-to-one ratio. We're not talking about separate things. The water is what conducts the energy.
You just tied together so many things for me, because I've talked about this a lot very loosely and haven't been able to like verbalize my thoughts well. I've interviewed Eileen McCusick, and she obviously goes into the human biofield and human biofield anatomy and biofield tuning and talks about that extensively. Then I've interviewed Veda, then also Gerald Pollack, and then Lauren Lockman on water fasting. And it's like, there's something here with both the energy, like our biofield, our aura, and in the water. And it's that if we have proper structured water inside our body, which our cells are comprised of, and correct me if I'm wrong here, then the chi in us is flowing more appropriately, more clearly. Thus, our human biofield is more strong. And as Eileen says, the a strong coherent field will always overtake a weak incoherent mm-hmm. field. And that then, as it, you know, bringing in the context of the phenomenon of contagion, that's why when mm-hmm. you are, you know, you have a strong biofield, you're not going to have any bioresonance and have to go through a detoxification process that others may have to go to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it's the essence of terrain theory, right? Which yeah. I hesitate to call a theory at this point.
It's like the terrain model. It's the terrain
yeah.
model.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. This is the essence of the terrain model is yeah. what is the terrain? It is an aquatic terrain. All of the microorganisms in our body are our whole microbiome. They are aquatic creatures. Mm-hmm. They're basically fish, you know, and ourselves as well. They are aquatic creatures. Like, we are bodies of water. We tend to walk around with this idea that we're these solid creatures, and that leads us into these kind of, you know, very robotic ways of thinking of ourselves reductivistically and mechanistically, and that clearly yeah. is not in alignment with life force energy. Water is life, therefore hydration is health. If you understand the nature of water, you can tap into a vast potential of human health and wisdom and intuition and thriving and evolution. You know, if you look at the best studies that we currently have as to what is the driver of evolution, I think some of those come from, what was his name? Stanley Miller, a chemist mm-hmm. named Stanley Miller. And he showed that fundamentally life is created by charge forces, aka light or electromagnetism, in a super saturated water. So a very mineral and electrolyte rich kind of water. And he was actually able to generate de novo amino acids and genetic material just from electromagnetic information into a certain kind of water. Luc Montagnier did something similar in his yeah. work. And then another thing that Stanley Miller said was that if you take anything in the universe and you trace it back to its origin, you will find hydrogen at its origin. Mm. And so hydrogen fundamentally is the driver of evolution and of health. Well, what is hydrogen? We know that it's 2/3 of water, H2O. We also know that in Latin, the word hydro means water and gen means creation. So the creative essence or the creative spirit of water, which the Nobel Prize winner Albert Saint-Georgi called the fuel of life. And the more hydrogen we have access to, the more this evolutionary process takes place. Now, you mentioned Zach Bush earlier, whose work I absolutely love. And he opened my eyes to one particular aspect of hydrogen that was kind of unlocked a big key into this for me, because for a long time in I've studied the scientific side of water, the biological side of water, and then I also love to study the mysticism and the ancient indigenous wisdom teachings and the religious teachings about water throughout all cultures. And again and again and again, through my understanding of water and my understanding of these scriptural teachings, I kept saying, you know what? What makes sense is that hydrogen is the Holy Spirit. What makes sense is that hydrogen is the spirit of water. But I didn't quite have the scientific basis to connect that. And now there's tons of scientific, or like we could go deep in a rabbit hole of all of the science that actually talks about that in the same way that the mystical traditions do. But the thing that Dr. Zach Bush unlocked for me was he said, well, fundamentally, what is hydrogen and how does it act within water? It is, when it's protium hydrogen, it's one proton and one electron. And that electron has a mind of its own, and it's always dancing around and spinning off and joining other hydrogens and doing its own thing. So sometimes for a picosecond at a time, you have just a pure proton. And that proton, the best understanding of that we currently have for what a proton is that it is a black hole. It's a teeny tiny subatomic black hole. So water all the time is opening up these 64 tetrahedron black holes that are in constant communication with all time, space, and dimension through the heart of God, so to speak, through the heart of the center point of unity, the origin of all consciousness. And so there are ways for us to optimize both our body water and our drinking water, and arguably more importantly, the water in our environment, to have more access to this source point energy so that it can be expressing so much greater of a field of harmony and resonance, and actually weaving us into the cosmic dance as body bodies of water, living on an earthly body of water in a cosmic body of water.
My mind is blown. And again, you just tied in another thing for me, because I, as you know, I've talked to Veda quite a bit, and she's shown multiple presentations, both in person and virtually, that I've taken part in. And one thing that I've thought pretty frequently with respect to her work is that, and I'll pose this question for you, is water fundamentally conscious itself? Is it the conduit for consciousness, or is it consciousness? Like, I'm trying to figure out how it works, because previously I thought, okay, water is simply just a mirror. It's just mirroring back our environment. But then Veda has done a few, you know, follow-on experiments where she's asked water for a specific message that she needs to hear. And water reflects back very specific hieroglyphs, and Veda intuitively knew exactly what it meant. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I guess, yeah, turning it over to you now, your thoughts.
Yes. So water is absolutely communicative, and mm-hmm. far beyond just the basis of her nature as the reflector, as the primordial mirror, which just that in and of itself, we can learn so much from by understanding that what we do to water, we do to ourselves, mm-hmm. that water is always reflecting her treatment back to us. And therefore, as bodies of water, the way we treat water becomes our fate, becomes our destiny. Mm-hmm. So there's that mirroring influence that's happening. But as with any good relationship, good communication is the key, right? And you can't just reflect back to a person. You have to add to the conversation. And water is the most ancient being in the universe, and also the most wise. In fact, the word that we have for remembrance comes from the Latin, it comes from the Greek mem, which means water, and the German bear, which means to carry. So to carry water is to carry remembrance. The word memory comes from mem, which again means water, and ori, which means light. It is the light that is contained in water, and we know light to be consciousness. And so the memory itself, fundamentally, information fundamentally, is carried in water. But I think it's important, two things. One, to realize that what we typically think of as water is such a fraction of what water actually is. And if we're to understand water's relationship to consciousness, we need to kind of zoom out and see water as a whole being. And then the second thing is water's relationship to light, which again, you know, it's considered that light is consciousness. So I'll take them one by one. So I think of, you know, just like we are a body, mind, and spirit. And if I'm talking to you and I say, hey, Alex, what's up? Sorry, Alec, what's up? I'm not talking about just your body. I'm talking about you as a person and your mind and your spirit and all of the layers and aspects of you that make you the incredible man that you are. And so likewise, when we talk to or talk about water, typically we're just talking about water's body, right? We're talking mm-hmm. about the solid, the liquid, or the gas. And when we zoom out, we can see that actually water is in constant communion and communication with the etheric field, which you could call the quantum field, you could call it the Akashic records, and that water's capacity to connect to that field is in direct proportion to her health and to her coherence, right? The more that water is in a formation, the more it can store information. That information might come from imprinting that we imbue into the water, or it could come from its connection with the etheric field and with the Akashic realm, right? So it has constant access to that in the same way that you have constant access to your mind. So I think of the etheric field as being the mind of water. Now, obviously, if you are sleepy or comatose, you're not going to have the same access to your cognitive capacities.
So water running through a tap after it's been pumped with fluoride and other chemicals, and it's going through all these right angles and piping, mm-hmm. and then someone just like fills it up real quickly and doesn't bless it and just throws it back. That's not water that is able to connect as easily.
Exactly. That's a very traumatized water, or even bottled water, you know. Bottled water is very sleepy. It's very comatose. It's been stagnant for a long time. It just doesn't have that vivacity to it. And so it doesn't necessarily have the same access to its mind. And then I think of the spirit of water, you know, as we mentioned before, as being hydrogen, that hydrogen is the creative essence, the creative spirit of water. The more hydrogen is in the water, specifically protium hydrogen, the more this water actually has incredibly spiritual capacities. Like, you look at all of the most miraculous healing miracle springs in the world, like the spring at Bernadette's Grotto in Lourdes, France, or the spring in Tlacote, Mexico, or Nadana, India. Are there all these springs around the world where pilgrims will travel, you know, hundreds, thousands of miles to drink of this healing water because they know it can cure their ailments, and because there are often sightings of saints in those areas. Like in Nadana, India, a Hindu god was sighted there. In Tlacote, Mexico, Christ was sighted there. In Lourdes, France, the Mother Mary was sighted there. And one of the most prevalent things that we see in those springs is much higher levels of atomic and molecular hydrogen. So again, if it is protium hydrogen, it has the capacity to open these transdimensional, you know, subatomic doorways of black holes. And so there is this inherently spiritual nature to hydrogen. And so I think of that as being the mind, body, and the spirit of water. So can we say, is water itself consciousness? Or is water simply conscious in the way we are? I think that really depends on the way that you conceive of consciousness. So a lot of quantum physicists and you know, spiritual researchers, I don't know, whatever you want to call them, say that consciousness is light fundamentally. So what is water's relationship to light then? And is it just accessing these realms of light, or is it inherently in some way light? Well, it's estimated that for every one part matter in every water molecule, which would be the hydrogen and the oxygen, that's the one part matter, you have a trillion parts photons.
Whoa.
You have something like 980 something billion, 60 million parts photons or something like that. It's basically a trillion parts photons to every one part matter. So a photon is a type of boson. We think of photons as being light particles. And I think there's a bit of issue with calling anything a particle. Honestly, I'm not.
I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. Okay. Continue.
Yeah. So if you're not in the cult,
I actually questioned the notion of photons themselves because of the connotation with the particle, right?
Exactly.
And modern science obsession, which is rooted in materialism of everything having to be coming from a particle. Gravity. Oh, now we have gravitons, these theoretical particles. Virus, another theoretical particle. So there's all these particles that they pump out to try to reify materialism, making us think that everything is always material and reinforcing the materialistic paradigm.
Yeah. And it just robs the magic from everything, because it makes everything so mechanistic and makes everything so reductivist and so solid, and that's just not the way it works.
I'm so glad you said that, but continue.
We have a lot. We obviously have a lot to learn. I feel like humanity as a whole, we are babies. There was actually a really prominent water scientist who said, we know nothing about water. We literally know nothing about water. So I'm just sharing the little bit of the meniscus that we do know. Mm-hmm. And if you were to think of photons as being, rather than particles, these densifying vortexes of etheric energy that layer up into this dimension at different rates of densification. And so there's this kind of toroidal field, which is comprised of these two inward winding vortexes that meet together in the center. Because there is such a concentration of that photonic energy in the center, we call that a photon. But it's not like it has a clear border or is a clear thing that is separate from the photons around it or separate from its environment, right? So we know that that phenomenon, whatever it is about a trillion parts of water. So we could fundamentally say that water is liquid light, and that its capacity to tap into that light is in direct proportion to its general overall health. And And also, you know, Dr. Masaru Emoto, whose work I think gets stretched unfairly, but who I also have great respect for in a lot of ways. He said, you know, understanding that water exists as light at some point in its life cycle is an incredibly important, I'm butchering the quote exactly, but he says basically like it's incredibly important for understanding our place in the universe. And so, you know, then I started researching light. Well, fundamentally, what is light? You know, I want to get to the heart of consciousness. Where do I go? And where does light come from? And we know that light is emitted by fire. Light is emitted by the sun. Light is emitted by the moon. Some people say it's reflected by the moon. I don't know. Light is emitted by stars. And so I think there's a lot in the realm of astronomy that we need to take with a grain of salt, insofar as they compare it to already established paradigms, and they try to make the new findings fit into those paradigms. But 100%. If we just look at the findings themselves without the preconceived notions of what those findings fit into, there's still so much value there. So, you know, if we look into the outer reaches of the upper oceans beyond the firmament, then we can see that at some point in the life of stars.
It's so crazy how much you're on the same page as me here, but continue. Yeah. Beautiful. This is so good.
Oh, I love that.
It also shows your depth of research, not only on what you just said for it's like, if you know, you know, but what you said previously regarding photons, it's like, okay, your depth of research, not only on water, but it also extends into other areas. It's really fascinating. It's awesome.
Thanks. Well, I feel like water leads us in every direction. Like water is the substrate of the universe. So if you start diving into trying to understand water, then you start understanding, you know, the way that kind of everything works. Like subatomically, physicists measure the universe as a superfluid, as a water that never runs out of energy. And even macrocosmically, astrophysicists measure the cosmos in terms of a superfluid, a water that never runs out of energy. So if you understand the nature of water, you start understanding subatomic physics and macrocosmic physics and all of these. Yeah. So many rabbit holes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I interrupted. I don't know. I don't even remember what you're talking about now. I think you're talking about the firmament yeah. And then I completely was like, oh my God, she's done research. Okay.
I'll just finish up that thought, which is just a bit about light. Because, you know, if we're saying is water conscious fundamentally, or is it consciousness fundamentally, then, you know, we have to look at its relationship to light. So we know that water, you know, is liquid light. We also know that water can hold and contain light, and the healthier water is, the broader spectrum of light frequencies it will contain. We can get into that and the health implications of that in a minute if you want to, because that's fascinating. Yeah. But then we also have to look at, okay, well, then does light come from water? And so if we know the origins of light as being, you know, the sun or stars, then do those fundamentally come from water? Well, there's a lot to say in ancient indigenous texts and traditions, and also mystical religious teachings and scriptural texts about that being true. But for now, just for simplicity, I'll stick with the scientific stories around it, which is that every star is born inside of a nebula, which is a star nursery. Like our sun supposedly was born inside of the Orion cloud complex, which is a nebula that contains enough water to fill the Earth's oceans 10 million times. And that water isn't just, you know, happenstance as a bystander kind of present in these nebula, but rather it is both the mother and the midwife in the process of birthing stars. And so it is fundamentally, it is the mother. It is the mother of stars. Yeah. These stars come from these water dense cloud nurseries. And then if you look at a star through an analog telescope, it looks a lot like sonoluminescence or cymatic resonances in the water. And then also from astronomy, we've recently discovered that at some point in the life cycle of a star, it goes through a rite of passage, what the astronomers themselves call a rite of passage in its youth. where it starts basically ejaculating millions of tons of water from its north pole and its south pole, inseminating the garden of space around it with so much water that then goes on to birth other stars in these nebula or these cloud complexes. And so we tend to think of space as being this empty vacuum. It's nonsense. It's a water park up there. Mm. It's incredible. And water is intimately related with light in many, many different ways.
God, that was beautiful. Oh my goodness. I don't even know where I want to take this now. I'm trying to think of like the best place to go. Could we talk about, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, but water and with respect to what you were calling like astral or something like that. You mentioned it before we got on. Yeah. Mm.
Astrobiophysics.
Yeah. No, it was something else. Hold on. I'm trying to think of what it was. Actually, let's just go. It'll come back to me. Let's go into.
That's okay. I can keep rolling on this light thing for a little while. Actually,
this is really
okay.
Cool.
Perfect, because there's something that I think we can ground this whole concept more into the practical for the people who are listening, which is that water, most of the water that we come into contact with, in addition to being dormant and comatose and sleepy and completely unstructured and having no coherence, it also contains very little light within it, very little of the spectrum of light frequencies. And it's very important to bring that spectrum back to water. Now, I'm not saying to leave water out in the sunshine. I think that's one of the common misperceptions in the world of water hippies is, oh, just put your water out in the sunshine and it'll get structured. No. According to Victor Schauberger, water in the sunshine is what he calls lazy water. So it actually gets a little sleepy. The more that water warms up in general, the molecules tend to spread apart.
Got
so
it.
You can think of like steam, for example. The molecules are very spread apart as the water warms. The closer water gets towards steam, the more the molecules spread apart. Water is happiest at about 4 degrees Celsius. You want to keep it relatively cool to keep the structure intact. However, water does need solar energy. Water also needs lunar energy. Water also needs starlight energy. Now, naturally, if we were living our typical life ways that our ancestors did, we as humans would be pretty consistently exposed to the spectrum of the sun that would put us into sync with our circadian rhythms because of the way that our water responds to those light frequencies at certain times in the day. And we would also be exposed to a lot more starlight, but we're not getting that light information. We're not connected to that consciousness of the cosmos in the way that we should be. But there are ways that you can actually restore that light back to water again through the principle of epitaxy or transference, which you were talking about earlier, Alec, when you were saying that something that is in a high degree of coherence will actually bring more coherence to anything chaotic in its environment. So we call that epitaxy or transference. It's the reason why some people put crystals in their water or something like that, because a crystal has a molecular matrix that is highly ordered and highly structured, and therefore can bring more order and structure to its environment. I think that is overestimated largely in its capacity to actually do that. But it is one of the tools in the toolbox. So there's something called the Analemma wand, and the scientist, you've heard of it?
I've interviewed, I forget his name. It wasn't Dolph. It was the other guy behind Analemma wand. And it was incredible.
Okay, beautiful.
I was super skeptical of the product before that. And then interviewing them, they brought up multiple studies they had done on like bio, Well, they had some studies with respect to farming, actually, that they brought up, which were pretty incredible. Then they had one that they did on twins talking about ATP production and the glycogen levels in the twins. And it was really fascinating.
Yeah, fundamentally, that's because there's more light in this water. This water has been, and I don't want to go over everything that your audience has already heard, but because this water is matured over the course of an entire year in relationship to all of the, it has the entire frequency of the spectrum of light within it that nature would experience over all of the cycles and all of the seasons. And so, it can create brainwave coherence. It can restore genetic information of microbiota and bacteria in your microbiome. microbiome, so that even if you have a vastly depleted microbiome, just the way that water translates light frequencies can actually restore that life force energy and that genetic material in your body. And so, you know, it's been said that light is just a bundle of frequencies that has to be brought in by the right water. It has to be translated by the right water. One of water's fundamental capacities is as a transducer of energy, meaning it can take one kind of energy and turn it into another kind of energy. And it's something that all that crystals can do as well. It's why we use crystals and watches and computers. That's why you're watching this on an LCD screen, which is a liquid crystal display. It can actually turn the electromagnetic information it's receiving and turn that into light and color and that sort of thing. That's transduction. Water also has this capacity of transduction, but light has absolutely no effect on biology without the transduction capacities of water. So, you know, the sun only has its life-giving effects on the earth because of the phase changes of water, whether we're talking about cloud microphysics or fluctuating sea surface temperatures or any of these general phase changes of water. If there were no water on the earth and in the atmosphere, the sun would have zero effect here whatsoever. Wow. So we think of the sun as being the giver of life, but fundamentally it's this lovemaking that happens between water and the sun, that water is both the mother of the sun and the lover of the sun here on earth, and that is what gives birth to all of life.
God, dude, you're like, I don't know what thread to pull on. So let's get into like the health implications of water, and I guess some misconceptions surrounding even the holistic health and alternative health space with respect to water, because I hear a lot of people talking about the need to drink alkaline water as an example. And of course, like alkaline water. Yeah. See, you're like shaking your head a little bit there. And it's like, then we have Kangen water and everyone's really big on Kangen water. And I just like to hear your thoughts in general on, just some common misconceptions surrounding water that you see prevalent amongst the alternative and holistic health spaces.
Yeah, there are so many, and it's totally understandable because there's so much conflicting information, and it's way too much time and energy for most people to go down the rabbit hole of sifting through all of it. And it's, even after 14 years of studying water since 2009, I'm still learning new things every single day.
Can we start with one, actually? Because this is one that's like on the tip of my mind. Whether or not after you restructure your water, bring your water back into coherence, you need to remineralize it. I've heard some people say absolutely yes, and I've heard some people say no, it's not necessary at all, especially if you're getting proper mineral intake through your food. So thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think remineralization is incredibly important, and I would recommend doing it actually before you structure your water. So we, bar none, are not getting enough electrolytes and minerals in the food that we eat. You know, even back in the 1930s, there was actually a statement made to Congress about how fewer minerals there were in the 30s in the soil. That was almost 100 years ago. Yeah. And even back then, we were not getting the amount of minerals that we're designed to receive. And so now we simply aren't getting it. But we're also designed to be drinking spring water that is in and of itself an electrolyte supplement. It's also a probiotic supplement. It's also a prebiotic supplement. Spring water contains such a vast array of a spectrum of different components that make it a whole and well-rounded being. So fundamentally, we want to drink whole, healthy water, just like we don't want to eat processed food. We don't want to drink processed water. Most of the water people drink is highly industrialized. It's been robbed of its electrolytes. It's been robbed of its microorganisms. It's been robbed of its capacity to breathe, its capacity to exchange gases like oxygen and carbonic acid. And so it's deprived of its breath. It's deprived of the electromagnetic frequencies. You know, it doesn't have access to the light spectrum. Maybe it's, you know, in the dark in a well, and then in the bright sunshine on the back of a truck, and then it's in the fluorescent light on a grocery store shelf. It's like, you know, fundamentally water has all of the same needs that we have. And so my thoughts in general, okay, I have like a couple different directions we could go here. Yeah. So either like my general methodology for bringing any water back back to its spring quality state, or what's fucked up about all the waters that people are currently
drinking?
Let's
do both. So let's okay. do the what's fucked up first as okay. like context, and then like what you do to bring your water back into a coherent state.
Okay. Great.
Is that cool?
Totally.
Okay.
So we'll start with distilled and reverse osmosis water because it ties into what you're saying about the water.
I have a reverse osmosis system. So,
okay. Oh, bless your heart. That's okay. You can still bring that water back to life.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So distillation and reverse osmosis basically create what hydrologists call an aggressive solvent. Mm-hmm. So it creates what Schauberger would call an immature water. He said immature water is, and water has a life cycle just like we have, right? It is a living being. And so it can be young or old, healthy or sick, mature or immature. It can be gestational. It can be a newborn baby. It can be elderly. We can talk about some of those different characteristics if you want. But in terms of distillation and reverse osmosis, it's an immature water. And so Schauberger said that water grasps like a baby at everything in its environment because it's trying to learn. It's trying to pull in everything that it can. Right. And according to hydrology, that water, because it has been robbed of all of its minerals, is trying to fill itself back up again. It's hungry, right? We partake of the earth element when we eat food that was grown in the soil or food that ate food that was grown in the soil. Water needs to eat and partake of the earth element by absorbing minerals into it that when they dissolve become electrolytes. And so this water is starved fundamentally. And so it's really important to restore that electrolytic balance back to the water again, among other factors that we'll talk about in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Another really common type of water that people drink is bottled water. So bottled water, or we
you
can
mean
actually,
like plastic bottled water, right? Like, are you
like plastic bottles?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. I mean, I love that you have the blue bottle love there.
Yeah, yeah. It has the Way Forward logo on it too. It was really cool. Oh, nice. Yeah, she reached out to me, Caden, and said, "I have to throw your logo on a bottle." And I was like, "All right, cool. That's really cool." So shout out to Blue Bottle. That.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, and shout out to Caden too. She's great.
She's awesome. So yeah. Awesome.
I just saw somebody in the chat said, "Can distilled water be drinkable?" Of course you can drink it. You can eat, you know, tires if you really wanted to. It's just, what is that water doing for you in the long run? Are you going to actually absorb it, or is it just rushing through you and you're going to pee it straight out? So, you know, distilled water in the long run, distilled and reverse osmosis have been linked to things like diuresis and heart disease only in the long term after drinking them for a while because they're dehydrating over time. I think of there as being fundamentally like three kinds of water. There's water that is dehydrating. That's the water that most people drink. It's water that it takes a lot more energy for your body to convert that water into H3O2, into highly structured living bioavailable water to bring that into your cells. It takes energy for your body to do that. And so it takes more energy than you actually get back from that water in its hydroelectricity. And so generally it's leaching minerals, it's leaching energy. You can drink it, but it's not going to hydrate you. The second type of water I think of as being like your basic kind of spring water. This is the minimum that everyone should be drinking, or either going to your local spring and getting local spring water, or having alchemical practices that can ennoble your water back to its spring quality state. And so that would be the minimum, you know, and that water needs to be filtered, structured, balanced, and energized, right? And we can talk about those different steps in a little bit if you want, but that's, I think, of being the baseline minimum to be hydrated, well hydrated. But hydration is a spectrum, and there is no upper limit to how hydrated you can be. You are a body of water. How much energy do you want to be conducting? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And so if we go to these like miracle springs, these Nadana, India, Tlacote, Mexico, you know, Lourdes, France, can we turn our water into that quality? And what's our quality of life and spirit and mind when we do that? And so that's kind of like the upper echelon of possibility. But at the minimum, I want to at least get people to the point where they're not drinking, you know, we could call it water, but a lot of times it's just, it's a chemical cocktail of liquid, of clear liquid, you know, that people are drinking. And we got to get off of that because water is currently being used as a weapon of war. We don't realize there is a silent war going on in many different ways right now in the modern world. And water is a big part of that.
Yeah. And a question I had with respect to spring water specifically, and I've thought about this a lot, is there any concern in your mind? I mean, there has to be some level of concern regarding some of the springs, even on findaspring.com, mm-hmm. because of, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, the ones on findaspring.com, they're not independently tested to see mm-hmm. if they have high, you know, dioxin contents or things like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So findaspring.com is a user supported website. And so anyone can go on there and add a new spring. And if they have data where they have personally gotten it tested, they can add that data in there. So sometimes you'll find springs that have already been structured. But you have to kind of be somewhat savvy. Like, if you know that your water is downstream from a cattle ranch, or you know there's been a big chemical spill in the area,
or by a golf course or something like that.
Yeah. Or, you know, it also depends on the depth of the spring as well. You know, if it's down in a deeper aquifer, then the earth itself and the geology in that area will filter a lot of those toxins way before they get to the aquifer. But if you're in an area where there is a lot of fracking, then you have to be very careful. There's a website called fracktracker.org that was really helpful for discerning that. And then it got shut down. So now it's hard to even find out whether there is fracking in your area. But I will say that the safest springs are always at the highest elevations. So if you can find a mountain spring in your area or whatever the highest elevation is, will be the best bet. The last thing I'll say is there are ways to get it tested. So I have spring water tests that you can get at waterislife.shop if you just want to be extra sure that your spring is clean.
Okay, cool. And then the other question I had was with respect to bottled spring water that you can find in stores. If you're enjoying this episode so far, please share it with a family member, a loved one, a fellow tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist, or your neighbor who thinks you're absolutely nuts. We are censored and shadow banned on virtually every platform, making it difficult for us to showcase what we're doing, so we rely on you all to help us grow. Also, if you like this podcast, please consider becoming a member of The Way Forward to support us. We put a lot of intention into what we do, and our membership has so much value. And we're so grateful for your continued support so we can keep making these episodes and providing valuable information to you. Lastly, if you have a holistic health or freedom-oriented business you run, or if you know of one, please head to or share our business directory form in the show notes. The directory is currently private, but we plan on launching it publicly soon, fully funded by the Way Forward members. Over half of the businesses in our directory offer exclusive discounts for members to The Way Forward, and we sincerely appreciate your help with onboarding these businesses to our directory so that we can drive our members to those businesses and create more value for you, our supporters. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of the episode. Mm-hmm. So, as an example, I know a lot of people who drink Mountain Valley. Do you have any mm-hmm. thoughts on those types of water?
I think that if you need to buy a bottled water from the store, your best bet is definitely to go with a bottled spring water that is in a glass bottle. Something like Aquapana or Mountain Valley would be good. Although the industry lobbied to have the laws changed for what actually constitutes a spring. So 9 times out of 10, or even 99 times out of 100, it's actually not spring water. It's artesian well water, where they drill a borehole into the aquifer, pump the water up, which is premature water, if you're looking into the life cycle of water, and they can still label that spring water. And so that water still needs to go through some of these processes, filter, structure, balance, and energize to bring it into its highest quality state. But I think that says a lot about our fundamental understanding as human beings that we want to drink spring water. We know that spring water is the best. Yeah. That's why companies will take their swag water and label it spring water, even if it's not, because we just know in our hearts that that's what we need to be drinking.
Yeah, that's so true. Oh man. And then another question I had was with respect to water. Let me think of how to frame this. So I guess in your structuring process, let's just go to that. Let's go to your structuring process. And then I want to come back to Kangen water, because I want to be clear. And actually, no, let's do Kangen water.
Okay.
I want to be clear in communicating this. I know a lot of people who've had what they claim to be success healing lots of things. using Kangen water, and then also touching on alkaline water, which I'll get to in a minute. But what are your thoughts on Kangen water? Do you acknowledge that people have had success in healing and reversing some of these issues with Kangen water? Yeah,
I have a lot of thoughts on Kangen water. I'll try to keep it succinct. Yeah. I have 2 20-minute videos on my YouTube channel all about that if people want to dive deep into the science behind it. I do acknowledge that people have had healing from it because of the high levels of hydrogen. It is not because of the ORP. It is not because of the pH. It is because of the high levels of hydrogen. And insofar as that's true, there are much better ways of getting hydrogen without putting your water through direct electrolysis. The electrolysis process splits apart the hydrogen bonds. And so it destructures the water. It creates a water that is very traumatized and very chaotic. So it, you can think of it as like, you can electrocute someone to free their spirit, sure. But do you want to do that? Does that make them a more spirited person?
Yeah, if we're thinking of water as a being, which we have to completely reflip our whole mental construct on what water actually is, then in the Kangen process, it's like electrocuting the water to make it alkaline.
Exactly.
Or make it whatever, you know, type of water you want it to be.
Exactly. So we have to be very careful with that, because what we do to water, we do to ourselves. When you drink water, it becomes your blood within 5 minutes. How do you want to cherish your blood? By pumping strong voltage of like DC currents into it? I hope not.
Does that frustrate you that they, like a lot of people that talk about Kangen water call it living water?
Yes! That frustrates me so much. Thank you.
I see so many people say that like, oh, I drink living water, and they're talking about Kangen, and it never felt right with me. I had a few friends who I respect greatly that tried to get me to get a Kangen system and promote Kangen. I just like, nope, just doesn't feel right. Not going to do it. And I'm glad that I didn't. And I'm glad I saved it till this conversation to bring it up with you, because yeah, there's just something about that never really sat right. And that is frustrating now, knowing that they call it living water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. You get it. That's It's so true. And it's ironic, because the word Kangen itself means from the source. And yet, what does the word source mean? Well, in French, it comes from the French word la source, which means the spring. Mm. So we need to study the hydrology of a spring if we really want to take our water back to the source and allow our water to connect us fundamentally with source energy. And when you study the history of Kangen as well, it's like, you know, a lot of the studies that they cite for water's healing capacity came out in the 90s or the early 2000s. Well, in 2007, those researchers who were studying electrolyzed reduced water, they were studying ionized high pH, high hydrogen water. They realized that all of those results were actually coming from the higher levels of hydrogen and not from the pH of the ORP. So, for example, Dr. Hidemitsu Hayashi, who is the director of the Korean Water Society, he was one of the original pioneers of Kangen back in the day. Once he found this out, he switched his entire career over and all of his research over to studying high hydrogen water rather than ionized water creating the hydrogen. And so, yeah, even if you look at kind of the history of it, it's like, you know, some things take just a while to catch up with where the research is. And there's so many misperceptions. And most of the people in this field, they only get their water information directly from company dogma. And so I would just really invite anybody who is immersed in that company dogma to just like broaden your scope of research a bit, because there are people doing incredible work in the field of water. And that's not to negate the healing effects that you've had from Kangen. But if you look, first of all, look for long-term human studies of people drinking alkaline ionized water. It's easy to find the short-term studies where in the short term people get benefits because of the hydrogen, but find a long-term human studies. You'll find almost none. And when you actually talk to doctors and clinicians who are working with cases one-on-one, they'll say there's a preponderance of H. pylori because you're shifting the acidity in the gut. There's a preponderance of bloating, of skin issues, of ulcers, of all kinds of things. I spoke to this amazing woman, it was so many years ago. She's a doctor in Santa Fe, and Dr. Heather, I'm not going to remember her last name. Anyway, she does Dr. dark
Heather,
field.
If you're out there,
Dr. Heather,
if you're out there, let us know.
So Dr. Heather told me that, so she does dark field microscopy where she looks at blood under a dark field microscope, live blood analysis. And she says she can always tell the people who have been drinking Kangen in the long term because they have a preponderance of ruptured cells. Wow. So your blood needs to stay. And there's actually even studies on this. There are some rat studies showing cell necrosis and issues with the heart muscles in rats who drink alkaline ionized water in the long term. So your body is designed to be very stable. It likes a specific homeodynamic range within which it likes to stay, right? Homeostasis would be all the same, but it's homeodynamic. You like to fluctuate within a very stable range. And that's very true of your pH. So your every different hydrological system, every different watershed within your body has its own natural pH. Your gut and your digestive system needs to be very acidic. Your blood stays just slightly over 7. And if your blood type O, for example, it's slightly under 7. So everyone's body has their own intelligence around this. And if we artificially shift the pH of our bloodstream in extreme ways, the body has to work very hard to keep that stable. And it works hard by actually producing a lot more buffers, which are like different kinds of bicarbonates that are produced, you know, in the liver. And it just has to work harder than it needs to. So nature functions in balance, your body functions in balance. You know, everyone talks about the redox potential of the water, and that's great. ORP is great. But, you know, you look at some fruits that have, you know, a very high positive ORP, and yet they are still antioxidants and have a reductive potential within the body. So we can't just simplify things in such a reductivist kind of way of thinking about them, because I don't even necessarily think that ORP is the most important or even among the most important measurements of water.
Can you share what ORP is specifically? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. ORP is oxidative reductive potential. And so a lot of people in the Kangen sphere will say, oh, this water has such a low ORP. It's negative whatever ORP. And that means it has a really high oxidative reductive potential and it will cancel out any oxygen-free radicals or oxidants in your body. But what is more important than ORP? Because you need some oxygen radicals in your body. They actually function as signaling molecules within your body. So your body knows when and how to regulate itself and when to deploy certain antioxidants like glutathione and other things because it can sense the presence of certain oxygen radicals. Everything should be in balance in the body, not in extreme. So if you get rid of all of the oxygen radicals because you have this extremely high or low ORP water, you're going to put your body at a disadvantage eventually.
Whereas, see, that's kind of the same thing with respect to parasites as an example. Yeah. Like everyone wants to do parasite cleanse. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure if parasites, you know, parasites is a catch-all for a lot of things, but there are certain types of parasites that eat heavy metals. You'd probably want to keep some of those in your gut rather than just rid yourself of all the parasites if they're there to detoxify parts of your gut. Right.
Totally. It's like, rather than how can we get rid of XYZ virus, parasite, whatever, it's like, how can we support the health of the microbiontes that then like become whatever beneficial parasites or become whatever beneficial microorganisms. So yeah, just my last thought on the whole Kangen thing would be, there are better ways to create hydrogen, and hydrogen rather than acting as an overall umbrella catch-all antioxidant in the body, scientists actually had to develop a whole new term that describes only hydrogen and nothing else, which is an intelligent antioxidant, meaning it will act as an antioxidant in the areas that your body needs and will allow your body to keep the oxygen and oxygen derivatives that your body needs. So hydrogen acts with this level of intelligence that scientists had not seen in any other molecule ever. So again, hydrogen being the spirit of water, being the force through which this intelligence and consciousness comes through water, the more hydrogen in your water, the more intelligently it conducts the entire symphony of your health and wellness. So if somebody has been considering getting a Kangen machine, I would encourage you to look at something like, for example, a Spring Aqua Wet 7. You can find that at waterslife.shop. It filters, it structures, it energizes, it remineralizes, and it suffuses the water with high levels of therapeutic doses of molecular hydrogen without electrolyzing the water. So you don't have to electrocute it to get that. And then the other thing I would recommend, if you already have a strategy in place for filtering and structuring and remineralizing, and you say, you know, I've already got my water to a good level of being like spring quality and hydrating, but I just want to give it that extra oomph and take it to that level of being kind of like really therapeutic medicinal water, then I would recommend a device called the Lord's Hydrofix, also at waterislife.shop. And that currently is the only hydrogen generator, the only two hydrogen generators that I actually endorse. But okay. Like I've looked at everything on the market and I'm like, nope, these are the best.
Cool. Awesome. And then I'll just have you send me those links so I can put those in the show notes too, specifically for those products. Let's talk now about restructuring and or bring your water back into coherence from the lens of those who have a distillation system or a reverse osmosis system, and then go into those who are just have tap water that they're drinking right now. So we can cover it from sort of both angles.
Yeah, for sure. So if somebody just has tap water, then their first step would be filtration. And there are so many different filters on the market. I have all the ones that I have vetted at waterislife.shop. There are so many different modalities and methodologies, but we don't have to go into all of them. All I'll say about that is, you know, water again has all of the same fundamental needs that we have. So she needs to be clean. She needs hygiene, right? And that is filtration. But most people stop there and they say, oh, this water is filtered and it's clean and therefore it's healthy water. But that's like saying, oh, I took a shower today, therefore I'm healthy. Mm-hmm. That is so, you know, health is such a spectrum of different inputs. And so it is very important to filter your water if you have tap water, but we don't just want to stop there. The next step after filter is structure. And so this is where I would start talking to the people who already have some kind of filter like reverse osmosis or distillation. Ideally, you would want to switch off of reverse osmosis or distillation and get something like a really high quality carbon block filter or something like that. There are different kinds of carbon block filters. I don't lump them all into the same category. If you want to get into the differences, we can do that. But I would say, you know, after you have that that filtration step handled, then the next step is structure. So just like we have the need for quality relationships, and we know that isolation kills, and that, you know, as human beings, the more isolated you are, the more likely you are to die of all-cause mortality, because we are bodies of water who meant to live in community. Mm-hmm. Each molecule of water is also a body of water meant to live in community, and the relationships between those water molecules are what determine the health of that community of water, right? Wow. Water forms these cultures just like we do, and when the culture is very coherent, it can conduct a lot of really unique vibrations of energy, just like the cultures of human bodies of water, right? And so it's very important that these relationships are strong and stable. So the relationships are fundamentally formed between the hydrogen atoms within the water molecule. So when you have hydrogen bonding, there's different kinds of hydrogen bonds, like van der Waals bonds or electrostatic bonds, or these different kinds of bonds that I like to think of as being like the difference between a romantic relationship or a friendship or a family dynamic. There's these different kinds of relationships that are formed between the hydrogens. Wow. And they form a very diverse culture of structure and symmetry and determine what kind of energy that water can conduct. And so we want to make sure there's coherence. We want to make sure there's relationship. And there are a lot of different ways that you can do that. There are, for example, movement. Like if you move water in natural movement patterns, like vortexing or flow forms, you know, when water moves together, it coheres together. Just like if you go out on a dance floor with your friends, you're going to feel a lot more bonded with your friends after that. Yeah. It's the same thing with water, right? Just like we need to move, we can't sit still and stagnant all the time, or we'll get sick and unhealthy and dormant and sleepy. The same thing happens with water. So when we want to wake her back up again, we bring more movement back into the water. So there are vortexes. Ideally, you want a vortex that goes in both directions. all of these steps are just to mimic what water does in nature. We're just learning from nature and doing biomimicry and saying, what happens at a spring? Mm-hmm. Let's recreate that. Well, we know that when water comes up from an aquifer up to a spring head, she's actually drawn in a vortex of lunar gravity. She doesn't just flow up in a straight line. There's this vortexing energy that comes up to the surface. So we want to recreate vortexes, flow forms, actually create multiple vortexes within them. There's also different methodologies like we talked about earlier, like with the epitaxy and transference, where you can bring water back to life by, or rather create more coherence and more molecular symmetry and connection through being in the presence of something that is highly coherent. So something that is already very well structured.
Even could like holding it to your heartbeat though too,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Actually, there were Russian researchers who studied water's response to different stimuli. So a lot of ancient indigenous cultures referred to water as being the sensory organ of the universe. Like water is how nature sees and feels and hears and perceives and thinks and remembers. Like if you think of any of your senses, they are mirrored in water. When you look at water, water is looking at you. When you taste water, water is tasting you. When you see water, water is seeing you. And so when we interact with water in this way, she's minutely sensitive to about 60 octaves of different stimuli. I mean, we're sensitive to like, I don't know, a few octaves, right?
But wow.
60 octaves, almost everything. She's always taking in this information. And these Russian researchers realized that she was most sensitive to human emotion because we are bodies of water. And so we come into resonance. We come into this coherence within our body of water. You know, if you believe Dr. Joe Dispenza, he said that thoughts are electrical and emotions are magnetic. And so when you bring your thoughts and your emotions into coherence, you have this powerful electromagnetic field that is generated that absolutely imprints on the water, right? Because it too is a body of water. And so she responds most to your thoughts and to your feelings. And so if you really, really, really genuinely love your water, you can absolutely have a huge impact on her. But I don't think that just putting the word love on your bottle of water is going to make that much of a difference. Like, honestly, we can go into that in a little bit if you want, if like some of the misperceptions around Dr. Masaru Emoto's work and how that work is actually applicable versus how it's currently being applied by most people.
I'm curious about that because like, you know, Veda's work has even shown that just holding water to your heart can, you know, it's tough because she's not actually measuring the structure. She is then freezing it and showing it that it has this beautiful coherence, like a pattern to it. Right. Mm-hmm. So do you don't think that in all cases though, that that's sufficient to bring water back into coherence?
I do and I don't. So water's capacity to store and imprint information is directly proportional to its formation. So this is why I differentiate the steps of structure and energize, right?
Got it. Okay.
So there's a lot of overlap. Some things that structure also energize, some things that energize also structure, and you will have a lot better energizing effect if you structure the water first. And then
like if I were to use the Analemma wand and then hold it to my heart, like would that be a combination of the two?
Well, Analemma structures and energizes because it has all of those light frequencies within it.
Okay.
Yeah. But I would say something like a vortex. If you were to vortex your water first and then hold it to your heart, it would be a lot more impactful. Not to say that it would have no impact if you did it before that, but it would just have more measurable impact if you do it afterwards because water that's in a formation can store information. And water is always sensitive. It's just how sensitive she is depends on how kind of awakened and vivacious she is. And if you create such a field of devotional respect and love that it becomes the most overpowering thing in the entire room, it doesn't matter what water you're starting with, of course she's going to resonate with that. Of course that's going to bring her into coherence. But most of the people that I talk to, sadly, they just want something quick and easy. They just want is the most convenient thing that I can do. Like, let me just
this is sad because even like, you know, the Analemma wand, 40 seconds, you're supposed to do it for at least 40 seconds. Sometimes like if I'm in a hurry, I'm filling up a glass of water. I'm like, all right, like I think that's good enough. It's the most, that's so sad. It's so sad, but
it's sad, but it, you know, it's
at least
it's,
I'm honest.
I think that's most of us, honestly. Yeah. And that's why like even all of these steps are kind of like, almost overcomplicating things. Like the most important thing, and if you take nothing,
but are they though? Because this is like water itself is life, as you're sharing, and it's like this. It's conversations like this that remind me, like, oh shit, dude, you need to slow down.
Yeah.
In life, you just need to slow down, because why am I in such a hurry that I need to fill my water up so fast that I can't spend 40 seconds stirring a wand inside of it, setting intention that is actually helping me heal and come back into coherence as a being?
Yeah. Well, it's about reprogramming this fundamental disconnect that we have in our minds. We're so domesticated that we think of everything as being commodified. Everything in our environment is an object to be used for our convenience. And it's like, what if we just shift our fundamental understanding of, you know, when our blood is outside of us, we call it water. When it's inside of us, we call it blood. But if you interact with your water as though, wow, this is actually my bloodstream. 5 minutes from now, this will be my bloodstream. This water, if I awaken it, has access to what the water of the saliva of a jaguar knows. This water has access to the information of dark matter that is potentially made of hydrogen in deep space. This water has access to the information in the vapor of the last exhale that I will ever make in this life. This water has potentially access to the information of my great, 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 great grandmother's bloodstream. This water is the most ancient, the most wise being. And if I bring her into coherence, she can weave me into the greater cosmic choreography, the orchestration of the universe, which is bodies of water floating in bodies of water. And this water can actually bring me into being a part of that conversation, tap me into my own intelligence and my own intuition. And if we see water as being the medium between the human and the heavenly, the medium between the manifest and the non-manifest, which is the main thing that I've learned from studying all of the ancient indigenous and religious teachings, is that that's water's fundamental primary role. There are a million ways and languages for explaining that. There are a million, you know, pantheons and allegories for explaining that, but they all fundamentally come down to the same principle, that water is this point of mediation. It's like the telephone between the physical, the non-physical, between the human and the divine. And if we see it that way, we can't treat it like an inanimate object. Because what happens when we do? What happens when we treat water like an inanimate object? Then humanity itself becomes commodified. Life itself becomes commodified. And that's what we see happening on this planet. Everything is commodified for profit, and there's no more room for the sacred. And I think the best way to shift things, both ecologically and economically and politically and sociologically, is to start coming back into reciprocal communion and relationship with the source of life itself. It is not a resource. It is the source, as Veda Austin says. And it is about that relationship. It's about that one-to-one communion.
God. This recontextualizes baptism in like the most beautiful way. And then I was thinking a minute ago when you were talking, when we were kind of talking about holding water to your heart, the power of prayer with respect to water too, like blessing your water and saying a blessing over it. So for context, I interviewed Vinnie Tolman. He had what's called an after-death experience, where he was actually zipped up in a body bag, legally pronounced dead, no heartbeat, body already setting into rigor mortis. And he ventured into the afterlife, and he said the thing that actually pulled him back to his body as he was up experiencing the heavenly realms was his brother sitting at his bedside in the hospital saying a prayer over his body. And that brought his soul, his spirit, back into his body. And when I am operating in a conscious state, which I try to be most of the time, I structure my water and then say a blessing over it. And do you do that in your practice, or?
Yeah, I have a little prayer that I say every morning when I'm kind of preparing my little water alchemy altar in the lab over here. And that's such a beautiful story that your friend told. I love that. I heard another similar one recently on a podcast, actually, that was something like a woman got into a horrible accident and then she had an out-of-body experience. And she remembered hearing the prayer of a woman who was in a car that was passing by. And that's kind of what pulled her back into her body. But she also heard a man who was in another car passing by who was like, damn it, I'm so frustrated. I'm not going to get to work on time, whatever it was. She ended up, when she got back into her body, she found that person who had made the prayer, because she remembered enough like specific identifying details about the car that she was able to find that person and track her down and say, thank you for praying for me. And it changed both of their lives to realize how powerful prayer is. Wow. But it really reminds me of something that, of some studies that were conducted by Dr. Gilbert Ling and Dr. Konstantin Korokov, because you know, if we say that water is life, then what is death? And when we go through the death process, what is happening to our bio water? And there's so much juicy, interesting goodness in this topic that we could have a whole podcast on this alone. But suffice it to say that Dr. Gilbert Ling, in all of his many decades of research as a biologist towards the end of his career, you know, he got into biology because he wanted to understand life and our bodies as living beings and what is life force. And by the end of his career, he said, you know, the best explanation that I can come up with is I truly believe from all of everything I've seen, life is structured water. Life is the structure of water. When water is structured, it can conduct life. And when it's not, it can't. And we see that again and again when we look at any intracellular fluid of a person who has any disease whatsoever, be that, you know, AIDS or diabetes or cancer, they have less structure, symmetry, and coherence in their intracellular fluid. And so it cannot conduct the coherence of greater life force energy into it, just like a crystal that is crumbling and falling apart and can't function like a living liquid crystal anymore. So Dr. Korotkov, he did a lot of pioneering work with the gas discharge visualization camera, or GDV cameras, where they can actually see the radiation of photonic energy coming from anything, from a drop of water or the leaf of a plant or your body. And so he, for quite a bit of his career, he was doing this one long-term study on bodies as they die and as they pass away. And so you know, Dr. Gilbert Ling said, you know, when you're dead, your body loses its bio-water structure. And Korotkov showed that the body gradually starts emitting less and less light over a period of about 60 hours from the point of death. So the heart stops, and then there's about 60 hours through which the body emits less and less light, and certain areas of the body go out first. So your body continuously emits more light from the heart and the genitals longer than any other part of the body. And so that would tell us, generally speaking, that there's more coherence in the heart and the genital, more bio water coherence in those areas. And so your bio water starts to incohere and you emit less and less light. But I think it's really interesting that he said that it's generally around 60 hours for everyone, because if you look at indigenous death rituals, a lot of them involve sitting with the body for 2 or 3 days afterwards and doing certain prayers and rituals to make sure that that spirit can find its way to the other side as it is gradually leaving and kind of traversing this liminal space in between life and death. And so they knew that. They knew that it takes a few days. And so you sit with the person, you make sure they get to the other side in a good way. It also takes a few days for the bio water to destructure. So I think water is life is absolutely true, but water is also death. Water is what mitigates death, you know, depending on the quality of the water, that is the state of death.
Yeah, yeah. Facilitates the transition. Wow. And it's just crazy to think about how connected people were back then. I mean, people in our space, that's like not a novel concept to them, like that we've been lied to regarding our history and regarding what human beings had in terms of knowledge and technology and things like this. But just the fact that they either intuitively knew because they were so connected to nature, or that they learned through some sort of measurements or a mix of both that they're supposed to be sitting with the body for 2 to 3 days is really pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our ancestors were on it. They knew so much more than we realize now.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't even think I let you finish the, like your, like what you recommend for people with water. Cause I don't think we got to the part of remineralizing.
Yeah. So it's filter, structure. And then the third step is balance. So in the balance, so in the filter structure, filter step, we make sure water has good hygiene. In the structure step, we make sure water has good quality movement and good quality relationships. And then in the balance step, we make sure that water is breathing and eating properly. So like any living being needs to breathe and needs to eat, right? Water needs to exchange gases. In fact, Dr. Tom Cowan said that he believed one day it would be found that the gases dissolved in water are just as important as the liquid water itself. And I would say that you can't separate them as any more than you could separate yourself from your breath. Healthy water breathes, right? And when water breathes, it dissolves these nanobubbles inside of it that not only oxygenate the water, they also increase the surface area of the water, making her a lot more sensitive to her environment and also increase the structure. So that's important. And then, and there are different ways to do that, like flow forms and vortexes will aerate the water. Also, you can get, you know, oxygenation drops, you can get hydrogen tablets, or you can just use something like the Lord's Hydrofix, which diffuses the water with a lot of molecular hydrogen gas. And then the other
set. What about these right here? This is Active H2 Ultra, infused water with molecular hydrogen. Is this a good one?
Yeah. So those are good. If you're traveling, if you're in a pinch and you don't have access to your main hydrogen generator, those are really good. The issue with those is that your body doesn't absorb very much of that hydrogen and it's not stable within the water. So you lose about 60% of the hydrogen, absorb about 40% of it when you put those in, and you have to drink it really soon after those dissolve in order to get the full effect. Otherwise, it's just going to volatilize into the air. Okay. There's some people who have raised some concerns about the long-term use of those with the liver. I haven't seen enough conclusive evidence one way or another, but I would say the best is to just get a hydrogen generator and use those when traveling or in a pinch.
Okay. Cool.
And then the second thing in the balance step is making sure that water is eating properly, which we already kind of talked about, you know, in terms of taking in minerals and electrolytes, that's really important. And the reason why I suggest adding the electrolytes before vortexing is that it's possible that when electrolytes go into a very high spin vortex, they actually can become ormus elements. So ormus elements are mono and diatomic elements that are in a very high spin state. They spin so fast, they basically become light. So you find really high levels of ormus at springs, for example. And if you put the electrolytes in the water before vortexing it, potentially, depending on the type of vortex, depending on factors, you could create a higher preponderance of ormus in your water. So that's filter, structure, balance. And then the last step is energize. And well, second to last step, the last step for your drinking water is energize. And that's where, like we talked about before, this is what information do you want that water to carry? What vibrations do you want it to become a liquid vessel of? And so my general recommendation for like a daily drinking water would be a water that has a very full spectrum. It's like the palette of colors that water can paint with, you know, and she paints your health. She paints, her artistry is your vivacity. Like everything that your body does, she needs a full palette of colors to be able to facilitate those functions in your body. So full vibrational spectrum. But then there's also certain times where you might want just a specific vibrational frequency. And for that, you can use something like an infopathy pad. So that's under the energized section of waterslife.love. And that's where you can program water with a very specific frequency. Like if you just want a stack of nootropics, you can just program the water with whatever nootropics you like. Or if you just want ayahuasca and mushrooms and LSD.
Have you heard what Veda said about her partner, Ryan, and his experience with like ayahuasca as it relates to water?
Yeah, that's incredible. Super cool. It's super interesting. And didn't it create like an eye in each one of the ice?
I don't know if I saw that, but she just said like he was eating the ice afterwards, and like some of the experiences he had were pretty amazing.
Yeah.
With respect to ayahuasca.
Yeah, so I think it's really the easiest way to microdose. You can do it using Veda's method, or you can do it using something like an infopathy pad and just put that specific frequency vibration into the water. I really think that is part of the future of medicine. You know, I mean, there are
it's
a lot
like homeopathy, essentially.
Yeah, Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I like to do oxytocin first thing in the morning. And then that just makes like a very loving day. You just fill your water with oxytocin. You feel good all day.
Thanks. Thanks for that tip. I'm going to do the same. Okay. And then the last step you said, so the second to last step was energized, but then the last step that you'd mentioned.
Well, energized is the last step for what we do to the water itself. And again, that's just mimicking everything that happens at a spring.
Okay.
And then the last step is more to do with your bio water itself and how primed your body is to actually receive and store and retain that water and put it to good use within your body. So, you know, if you drink really high quality water, but your cells aren't primed to receive it, it'll just pass straight through you. And most of the dehydration in our culture comes partially from drinking poor quality water, partially from eating a poor quality diet, but largely from our environment in general. It's like Dr. Zach Bush said, we're living in a desert without even realizing it. So, you know, if you are sitting a lot, most people are very stagnant. That actually prevents you from being able to absorb hydration. So when we drink water, that's irrigation, but the absorption into our cells is hydration. So a lot of people irrigate, but mostly we can't hydrate because your body has all of these hydrological systems, some of which are hydraulic networks. And hydraulic means movement by water, which means they only move when you move. Thankfully, our circulatory system has our heart, and so it's always moving. But your fascia, for example, which is a network that irrigates every cell in your body. It's 80% water and it delivers little droplets of water to every single cell. That only has its piezoelectric properties of compressing and expanding and moving and actually moving those water droplets along the fascia to hydrate your cells when you are moving. The same is true of your lymphatic fluid. It's not just a matter of how much water we can absorb, but it's also, can we detoxify that water when it is finished being used in the cells and in the tissues? Can we get it back into the lymphatic network and circulate that around is a big part of hydration. So your lymph isn't moving unless you're moving as well. So whereas drinking water starts the hydration process, movement actually completes it. So movement is a big part of hydration. EMF exposure is a huge part of hydration. I would say this is the most overlooked aspect. You know, if you're in the presence of strong man-made non-native EMF fields, you simply cannot, your cells just can't take in that water because your gap junctions start to resonate at the wrong frequency. Your cell membranes, which as we talked about, it's an electrical process that mitigates the osmotic flow of water in and out of the cells. That's an electrical process, right? And so if those cell membranes are resonating in harmony with a non-native frequency, then they can't bring across that osmotic flow of water. That's why we measure phase angle as an electrical measurement. And then let's see. EMF, movement. Another big one is diet. So not only did our ancestors eat a much more hydrating diet insofar as most of the foods that they ate were much higher in the water content in the foods themselves. And if you eat a fruit or a vegetable, it's going to have higher content of living water that's already structured. It is bio water.
So Gerald Pollack said, I asked him the best source of structured water he could think of, and he said fruits.
Totally. Fruits and vegetables. Yeah. Well, I think you have to be careful with that too, though, because tropical fruits actually have a lot more deuterium than fruits that are grown, you know, locally in your climate, if you're in North America, for example. So I think, you know, fruits and vegetables that are grown locally are going to be a lot more hydrating than importing a pineapple or coconut water or something from a distance, because those are just higher in deuterium. But I would say the other thing that is the most hydrating and probably the reason why ketogenic diets are so healing for so many people is because the higher fat in your diet is actually supports your body to absorb more water. So your cell membranes are made out of these lipid layers of fats. And so, you know, when people are eating mostly seed oils, their cell membranes are kind of degraded. And as Dr. Howard Murad said, you know, it's kind of like poking holes in a tire. It just kind of lets the water out in a way. So we want really strong, healthy cell membranes made of high quality fats. Mm. Also, the more fat you eat, the more metabolic water you produce. So for every 100 grams of fat that you eat, your body produces 110 grams of metabolic water, which is deuterium depleted, protein rich, cellular water. So your body is actually endogenously creating its own hydration. And that fundamentally is what we want to support the most so that we don't rely on external sources of water, but we're producing plenty of our own. And there's lots of other factors too. You know, if you're drinking a lot of caffeine, obviously you're more dehydrated. If you are in heated and air-conditioned environments, you're more dehydrated. They're basically everything that we do as human beings
all modern affects
our body water in some way.
Yeah, literally everything that we do in modern life. No big deal. So what do you do specifically for all those steps to bring your water back into coherence?
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit bougie with my water strategy.
Okay, so
I don't want to put people off by like, those are all the things that I do, but
well, because I mean, Dr. Cowan just shared his like 5 minute ritual or 5 to 10 minute ritual, whatever it was for what he does with his water. So, I mean, again, it all goes back to like, this is really an intentional thing and this is kind of what you do. So it kind of makes sense that you'd have a more bougie approach with respect to water.
Yeah, well, I actually have a lot of different rituals. It just depends on the day but I try to hit each one of these steps. So I start with water. Where I'm living now in the Yucatan, there aren't any springs. And so I use the spring aqua, which takes care of all of these steps. I actually was teaching these steps for years before I found spring aqua and was so excited to find them because I'm like, oh my God, it does all the things for you. So if somebody just wants like a simple, convenient thing that does all of those things, the spring aqua does it all. But then... yeah, I've got so many different flow forms. I've got some flow forms from Natural Action that are called the Carbon Gene, and they have specifically placed asymmetrical magnets inside of them. One of them has blue diamonds inside of it. The other one has 24 karat gold plated and a lot of shungite and a lot of ormus inside of it. And so you can let the water mature overnight inside of this. And that's similar to the ennoblement process that Victor Schauberger talked about, where water is basically becoming a liquid form of organite and condensing a lot of etheric energy into it. And so I love to do that. I let it mature overnight and then I drink a shot of it in the morning. You really only need like a shot of it per day.
It's really, do you like really feel energizing. You feel the energy coming off of it when you drink it?
It's energizing. It's not energizing like caffeine, but it's clarifying, you know?
Wow.
And then, let's see. And then I have a UMH structurer as well. So sometimes I'll pour through that. One of my favorite things to use is the InfoPathy pad, because I can program it with anything. I also really love using the Leela quantum blocks, because not only can you program stuff inside of the quantum block, but also you can just infuse the water with quantum energy inside of there. I have a rather long prayer that I say most days over the water. I also really love adding.
Can you share that, or is that like a personal thing for you?
I mean, I could. It's sort of over there if you're really curious. I've never shared
the prayer. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my
goodness. If you don't want to, you don't have to, but
sure.
I think it'd be cool to hear. Yeah.
It's long though. I mean, it's like a page long, but I can
read it. That's okay.
Okay.
I've been stumbling over my words in this episode because I'm like, I don't know which thread to pull on here, because you could go, it's kind of like talking with Veda meets Gerald Pollack in one person. And now I understand why Veda said what she said. And I'm like, my goodness, your depth of knowledge is amazing.
Oh, thanks. I've really been enjoying this chat too. You've been asking great questions. I feel like we've gotten to cover so many things so far. Like we've kind of touched on a little bit of everything. I also just saw somebody in the chat. I just checked the chat just now. It says somebody says she's only 28. I'm not 28.
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 32. I'm almost 33. But thank you, Mr. High Rock. Appreciate it. Okay. A little bit vulnerable, but
okay.
Thank you for pushing my comfort zone. This is exciting. Okay. Holy Spirit, fill me with your enlivening light that my words may touch the sacred heart of the Heavenly Father, Almighty God, our Lord the Most High. I offer my deepest gratitude for the gift of your love made manifest in liquid form, your life made tangible on earth, your breath and blood commingled in our aquatic bodies, your spirit manifest as water. I bless this water in your holy name, and I ask you to bless it once more so that we may continue to enjoy the most precious gift that you have poured out. You sanctified water even at the beginning of creation as your spirit hovered above the waters. You partnered with the sacred liquid life force to create the heavens and the earth. You sanctified water in such a way that lepers may be washed clean. And then you sanctified water in the person of your Son, Jesus Christ, as he was baptized by John in the Jordan River. You brought justice through the rains of the deluge, as you parted the Red Sea, as you baptized the soul through the vessel of water, as you worked countless miracles through this mediator between human and heavenly. I ask that you so bless this water before me to be an anointed glove on your righteous hand of pure consciousness, to do your will with full power and glory in your name, to work miracles on earth as it is in heaven, and to carry the vibration of your word. Water is the purveyor of your will on earth, and I consecrate myself as a body of water to do your will. We become sanctified by baptism with water in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. May my inner water flow as baptismal springs, always and forever reconsecrating me into the divine life of union with you, my Lord and Master, Savior and King, Confidant, Refuge, Healer, Shepherd, and Bridegroom. As water gives life to our bodies in this realm of your creation, so it is the earthly mirror of your heavenly spirit, which gives eternal life to our souls. In you we live, we move, and we have our being. We would cease to exist if you did not know our names. In the same way, in water we live, move, and have our being. Without water resonating the unique vibration you gave to each of us, we would die. Your spirit cleanses our souls of our sins, just as water cleanses our bodies and minds and emotions to prepare us for union with you. Living waters open the way to your embodied presence within us. You have invited us to drink of the living waters of your spirit so that we may live eternally, hydrated us in body, mind, and soul, that we may be quenched with the holy vibrations of your living word. Thanks to water, we have food that comes from the fertile earth. Water brings your life to your creation. In your name, I bless the rivers. In your holy name, I bless the lakes, the oceans, the ice, the glaciers, the mountain springs, and the aquifers. I bless the rains and the sources of water, seen and unseen. I bless the rivers below ground, the rivers above ground, and the rivers in the atmosphere. I bless the effulgent springs of water gushing forth from your creative essence in our cells and our DNA. I bless the cerebral spinal fluid to carry our awareness upward into the crystal cave, where we become anointed with the Christ oil of the sacred secretion. My body is the temple of God, filled to overflowing with the living holy water, for I am made in your image, and your redemption slakes all thirst. I bless and affirm the water wisdom awakening that is seeping through your people, Lord, for as water comes to life, your people are reborn and awaken to the divine life in you. For you are the living waters. Your waters hold the truth. And as water awakens, we awaken. In your name, I bless all waters and ask that you bless them again and again with each breath I take. I consecrate myself as a student, servant, and steward of my living waters, that my life might be a testament to your power and presence. And I give thanks for your abundant graciousness and generous love, which brings forth more gushing springs and quenching rains in every dry climate, renewing every forgotten watershed and hydrating every person who thirsts for liquid life. In divine mind, there is no lack. I affirm that all is quenched and right relationship to water is restored upon the earth as it is in heaven. Amen.
That was incredible. Thank you for doing that. That was
Thanks
awesome.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, that is incredible. Wow. Well, it makes sense why you have such a deep, intimate relationship with water, because the amount of intention, as you call it, bougie, I don't think it's bougie at all. The amount of intention that you put into your water is really, really incredible. It's amazing. And it's you're clearly so passionate talking about this topic, and you see people in the chat going, amen, amen. I'm sure they loved it too. It's really clear that this is kind of your calling and that you're supposed to be doing this, because the way you articulate this information is really incredible. And your depth of knowledge is awesome. Yeah, this has been an awesome conversation. We've already gone like an hour and 40. I have several other questions, but I wonder if it'd be better to have you on for like a part two, so as not to overwhelm people, because this was already a gush of information, pun intended.
It's a fire hose for sure. Yeah, I would love to come on another time. Thank you.
Yeah,
and it's been such a joy for me. Thank you for your kind words. Thank you for that reflection. I feel very blessed and grateful to be able to do the work that I love and was created for, and even more grateful to get to connect with amazing people like you who are doing such amazing work as well, and providing the platforms for brilliance to reach, you know, wide audiences. Like I said before we started this, I've been an admirer of yours since probably 2020, when you were kind of coming forth as this bold, brave, brilliant voice of courage. And I just so admire your security and the way that you bring this forward. So grateful to connect with you. Thank you for providing this this hour and a half together.
Thanks, Isabel. And thanks everyone for tuning in.